It's like, you just think all these people just have no knowledge, no sense, no nothing. You can just talk to them in any old way. And throughout my experiences, both with government and outside government and organizing, what I find is, as long as people can say, no, that's not going to work, and we believe it, they can get away with it. But the reality is, they can't get away with it when we say, no, that's not going to work. Sorry, we're living in a different time. We need a better cleanup of our river because we plan on being here for a really long time. We need jobs over here for people. And it can be a green economy. Don't let people tell you it can't be. You have to push on them. We have to go beyond just accepting what people say is, no, that can't be done, or, oh, we need 24% industrial because we decided that's how much it should be. We need a serious redistribution of wealth on how we're spending our budgetary monies and going out into communities that need the help. People need opportunities. People want purpose. People want to move forward, and they could be working out there on that river, making a living wage and doing great work. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Grady River Campaign's first call to action, held Tuesday, April 20th at Terminal 2 at the Port of Portland. To find out more about the Grady River Campaign, go to bradyrivercampaign.wordpress.com.
We're disconnected from the trees. Human touch replaced by screens. Entire species are dying. Migrating climate refugees. But our complacency ends here. We have demands, they're loud and clear. We've pulled the wool off of our eyes, and we will call them out on their lies. When they push us down, we will rise back up. We will fight the fight, we're not giving up. When we come together, stand hand in hand, the power of the people. Yes, when they push us down, we will rise back up. We will fight the fight, we're not giving up. When we come together, stand hand in hand, the power of the people. Yes, the power of the people. I said the power of the people renews my hope again.
Show your support for programming that covers critical topics with no corporate filter or influence. Go to kboo.fm/give to make a contribution today. You can also show your support for KBOO and Earth Day by purchasing a limited edition Plant the Seeds, Restore the Roots t-shirt at kboo.fm/edshirt. Thank you.
Blue sky, please tell us why
you had to hide away for so long. Why did we come
wrong? KBOO's Earth Day special programming is supported by our members and by the Columbia SLU Watershed Council's SLU DIY House Party, an excuse to let loose. An online benefit on Friday, April 23rd, with live music from Wren, the Matisse's Latin Ensemble, and DJ Mr. Mom. Tickets and more information can be found at columbiaslu.org.
You are listening to KBOO's Earth Day special programming, where we are planting the seeds and defending the roots. Up next, KBOO's Nick Campili speaks with the founders of the Blueprint Foundation, an organization which helps to introduce Portland's Black and Brown students to careers in environmental science and green infrastructure.
systemic racism in the climate movement has marginalized the voices of people of color. The Blueprint Foundation, created by members of the historically black fraternity Phi Beta Sigma, engages black students in programs designed to familiarize and reconnect them with Oregon's environment and prepare them for careers in the green sector. I spoke with Executive Director Dr. Duran Coles and Program Director Jason Strawman to learn about the Blueprint Foundation and the importance of black and brown representation in the green sector. I spoke with Duran and Jason in two separate interviews. At the start of our interviews, we spoke about their day-to-day responsibilities and their backgrounds. First, Jason. So, would you mind introducing yourself?
Sure, my name is Jason Strawman, and I'm the Program Director for the Blueprint Foundation.
And as Programming Director, what are your responsibilities at Blueprint?
Let's see, well, we're essentially an organization of two, and so we have our Executive Director and then myself are the only. My responsibilities involve recruiting program participants, recruiting and training mentors, scheduling all our activities and coordinating logistics for those activities, and then working with all of our community partners to build those partnerships as well as build programming that's relevant for our students looking to develop more opportunities, both for learning and workforce development for our students to get exposure into career possibilities within the green sector.
You have a background as a senior technician at Quantum Clean Global Technologies, worked as a mental health counselor and a mentor. And like you just said, you're fulfilling. How has that background factored into your career at Blueprint?
Like I said, I studied sociology and psychology in college, and I always intended to kind of work in the social work field. I didn't get into that right away out of college. I kind of had to do whatever to get by. And then I had the opportunity to get into the field working in residential treatment facilities, working with youth who have been introduced into the system one way or another. You know, for a lot of people, it's kind of a burnout job. It's pretty emotionally intensive. And I really enjoyed that work, but I also found that that system is made up of a disproportionate amount of students of color and students from underrepresented communities. However, the services in the system don't reflect that or cater to those cultural nuances.
Now, Duran.
I am the executive director of the Blueprint Foundation. I do most of the executive director things, but we are a small org. So me and our program director really share tasks, but primarily I work with partnership development. I develop culturally responsive curriculum for our workforce development programs. I do grant writing, and I help with logistics, strategic planning as well. I didn't start in education. I started in engineering, and actually informs why I wanted to do education in grad school. So for Blueprint, pretty much I activate my engineering design skills, as well as the learning that I have and training I have around culturally responsive teaching, which I learned at Oregon State University under a really great teacher and mentor, Michael Little Crow, with the Educational Opportunities Program. And so as we develop programs, I think about the technical things that students need to know, numeracy, for example, and how things work. For example, if you're putting in a bioswale, what technical knowledge do you need? But also, what social cultural knowledge do the students need as well? And how do we activate their assets, the pre-existing knowledge that they have, to help them learn new topics? So all those things I learned way back at Oregon State, and still apply all those cultural responsive teaching principles with Blueprint.
Mm-hmm. And you said that engineering informed part of the reason, like, why you wanted to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
What experiences did you have that led you down that route?
You know, I do workshops with teachers and firms about this as well. My experience learning in engineering, I started in high school. I went to Baltimore Polytechnic Institute. And the social issues in my personal life, and then the social issues around racism, just in our society and in our education system, I felt made learning new topics challenging, and performing, particularly during oral exams, that sort of thing, really difficult, because you're not focused on just the subject itself. You're also focused on the fact that you're very aware that you're the only Black person in the space, then you're very aware of all the stereotypes attached to Black people. And you're very aware that those stereotypes say that Black people wouldn't necessarily be made, quote, made for engineering and for science. And so having all that swirling in our heads, we really have to have coping strategies to push that aside and really show that, yes, we do have the technical knowledge, we do our homework, and we are prepared. When we don't have those coping strategies, an outside observer might think, oh, well, they don't know what they're doing, when that's very much not the case. And so we're trying to teach our students those strategies so that they can fully show the assets that they're bringing to the environmental sector.
Dr. Duron Coles joined Blueprint in 2014. While he worked at OSU, a colleague asked Duron to help him with a summer program for young Black engineers. After Duron left OSU to start a learning and development company, he was asked to help found a nonprofit.
A colleague of mine, while I was at OSU, he was with ODOT, and he had a summer program for Black youth interested in engineering. So I would go out and I would give a talk and just sort of be a coach for those future engineers. When he learned that I had left OSU and started learning and development company, he reached out and said, hey, can you help us start a nonprofit? And so that's sort of how I got involved, and they just never got rid of me, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. For those not familiar with the program, can you describe your organization's vision and goals?
So we're a workforce development nonprofit, and we are developing future green sector professionals. We have an early learners program called Engineering Promise. And what we're doing there is working with Black parents and the family child care providers for Black youth. And we're co-creating activities that they can do in nature and at home to develop engineering design skills for Black students before they go to kindergarten. Well, it's mostly high school, but we have some middle school students in it. That is called Grounding Waters and Constructing Careers. And those programs are using what we call the WISE model.
Duron explains what this model looks like.
And WISE stands for witness nature. So we take them out and they get to see parts of nature that they've never seen before. For example, we go out to the coast and inevitably one of our students will say, this is my first time being out at the coast, even though they grew up in Portland. I is investigate. So we investigate issues related to those wilderness areas and we connect it to issues within their own community and their own neighborhoods. Before, with the S, they have the opportunity to solve some of these issues. So they build bioswales, they plant trees, they do tree care, we pull non-native species, so we do restoration, we do plant identification. And then the E in WISE model is the students take on an educator role. And so they teach their community members about what they've learned and the importance of environmental stewardship. So they lead K-8 field trips, and they do go to community events as well to do that teaching.
The Blueprint Foundation has multiple programs where interested students can learn about green infrastructure or careers in environmental science. For example, Grounding Waters, one of the first programs Blueprint started, is dedicated to introducing Black students to environmental science. Constructing Careers is another program created by the foundation. It introduces students to the trades and green infrastructure.
So Grounding Waters was our first cohort when we started in 2015, and it revolved almost entirely around education with water quality and environmental science in ways that were most tangible for our students and for our geography. So working with folks right there in the Columbia SLU watershed where most of our students came from in that original biennium, so that they could go out and learn about things that directly affected their health and their neighborhood and our local ecology, and realizing that the larger impacts of that and how improving water quality, increasing tree canopy, all those had immediate impacts on quality of life for our communities as well as long term, and then translating that into the career opportunities in the green sector. And so as we built that out, we started looking more into green infrastructure, and that's where Constructing Careers came along, is to add more programming focused on the man versus natural built environment and understanding the different ways that green infrastructure can help mitigate water quality and stormwater management and different ways to be more effective at our restoration efforts. as well as a great entry point into exploring the careers and the trades and things like construction, and realizing that the construction industry, aside from being a wonderful financial opportunity for folks if they can access it, realizing that that industry also has to move towards sustainability and, you know, green friendly practices and regulations, and understanding that's just the future, period. And so the more well-versed and knowledgeable you are of that, the more marketable you are and the more opportunities you'll have within those industries that are having to move in that direction. On paper, they're kind of two different tracks of programming. The reality is all of our students have access to all those activities. We try to create a good balance of stewardship activities as well as career exploration options and getting some hands-on skills building. We do work out at Dharma Rain Center and with other partners like Colas Construction, where students get to actually tour active sites and then actually get to participate in some building projects. They've built bioswales, eco roofs, planter boxes, and done a lot of landscaping work. And so just building those skills, getting comfortable with tools, understanding that if you like to tinker, you like to work with your hands, there's great opportunities and there's a huge demand out there for that type of labor.
Blueprint's origins lie with the historically Black fraternity, Phi Beta Sigma. The fraternity's members are committed to a life of community service. When they founded an alumni chapter in Portland, they only had 6 members. Jason Strawman was Portland's chapter president. When they learned the graduation rate of Portland's Black high school students was low, they founded a mentorship program.
We started our local chapter here back in 2010, and we're looking for ways to make an immediate impact to our community. We looked at some reporting that came out in 2010 that showed really troubling statistics as far as the graduation rates of students in Oregon compared to the nation. And then when you filter that out for race and geography, it was even higher discrepancies for our Black students in the city. And so we decided to start there and create an affinity group with some students at Roosevelt High School using our contacts with the Step Up program, which is a wonderful program with the Alternative School Open School that already identifies students in certain clusters who have the most risk factors for not graduating. And so within that population, we established a group for Black males specifically. As an organization of professional Black men, we thought it was most appropriate to just leverage our experience in connecting with those students and started a mentoring program that was very successful. In 5 years, we had like a 99% graduation rate compared to the 52 or 53% of the general population. So that was going well, but we were very limited what we could do out of pocket just with our small amount of funds. So we did some research, realized that if we pursued starting a nonprofit, there was government money out there earmarked specifically for diversifying the green sector, you know, as well as other grant funding that we could pursue. So we did, went through that process, and in 2015, the Blueprint was born. And it also provided me the opportunity to kind of change what I was doing, working, you know, compressed 12-hour graveyard shifts at Quantum Clean there as a single parent.
And so why did you start with a mentorship program?
You know, with our limited size and resources, we had to be very intentional about what we invested our time and energy into. And a lot of us had background in social work, and a lot of us had a passion for mentoring. We understood that a lot of our individual successes were due to the mentors and the support that we had, whether it was, you know, through community members, through the organization, or through our other affiliations. We all understood how important mentorship was. So we knew that if we were intentional about reaching out and connecting with our young people and mentoring them and providing them with exposure and opportunities they might not otherwise see, that that could have a really big impact on not just the things they chose to do, but their success in those endeavors. And so that's kind of how it started. Like I said, we focused starting over there at Roosevelt High School in North Portland, because that's where the numbers were the most disparate as far as the graduation rates. Started there, and it just kind of grew from there. Our first cohort in 2015 for the first biennium was continuing to be focused on African-American males, but then there was such a great interest and demand from the community that we quickly changed our language and our grant proposals to make it co-ed, as well as we kind of organically grew out from working solely with high school students to working with much younger students, as well as continuing vehicles for students after they graduate to stay involved, whether it's to train as mentors themselves or just get additional support in their post-high school endeavors of college or career exploration.
Jason also spoke on the importance of Black and Brown students entering the green sector.
It's twofold. One, when you look at environmental justice issues, you'll quickly find that negative environmental impacts, whether it's pollution, whether it's concrete jungles, whether it's air quality, all of these issues disproportionately impact communities of color. If you look at where community colors are typically situated in cities around the country, but even especially here in Portland, historically, those areas, those neighborhoods have had the highest levels of pollution there, which in turn lead to higher rates of cancer and other health issues. And so just first understanding that these issues are, they're important for the earth and for all of us, because we only got one world to last, right, and take care of. But when you look at the impacts of pollution and global warming and climate change, those disproportionately impact communities of color. So it's important for our communities to be aware of that. And also, you know, to have representation and take a part in the solution to those issues. Because the reality is, at the end of the day, this is a huge chunk of the economy. When you talk about empowering communities, the most important thing is economic empowerment, right? And so it's important for folks from our community to know that there are viable family sustaining careers out there in these fields that do need those voices and do need those perspectives in the field. Any number of studies will show that in any industry, the more diversity you have, the more productive those industries are, the more they reflect the communities they serve. And so that's even tenfold is true in the environmental sector, where, like I said, these issues are impacting us in more extreme ways. And so when you think about industries that ebb and flow, the green sector is a recession-proof industry. We have to move towards sustainability. We have to figure out ways to produce things and farm and provide what we feel we need in more sustainable ways that are more environmentally responsible. It's just something we all have to do. And so those opportunities are there and growing. And we see this as a great way to empower folks from underserved communities to get a piece of that economic pie.
You've already touched on this a little bit during the interview, but in a 2018 interview with the World Salmon Council, you discussed the barriers students of color face in entering the Green Center. Could you please discuss those barriers and how the Blueprint Foundation assists students in overcoming those barriers?
It starts with just exposure at growing up to all these beautiful spaces we have in the Northwest. A lot of students grow up in areas or without the connections to really feel comfortable exploring those areas. There's a lot of historical and generational trauma that members of our community carry with the outdoors from the last couple hundred years. And so the first step is just reconnecting our young folks to nature in a way that we always have been historically before that trauma. Culturally, we've always had a strong connection to the land. And so helping to reestablish what's been severed through trauma, gentrification, all those things is the first step. And then, like I mentioned earlier, just being able to have a network and know people in the industry and see people that look like them working in these fields where it's often not seen, even where they do exist. There's not a lot of exposure. It's not what you see when you watch TV or when you look at organizations, larger organizations, you don't necessarily see that representation. So a lot of the barriers are psychological. It's getting them to change their mindset as to what's possible and what's available. When you've grown up not seeing that, the first thing you have to do is to believe it is to see it, right? You know, overcoming those psychological barriers is the first step. And then the practical barriers, knowing people in the industry that can help you with those entry-level jobs or help you, support you when you go into a workforce development program, you know, centering your cultural values versus dominant culture values goes a long way, both for students and young adults and adults, period, who work in these fields where they often feel socially isolated. And so part of what we realized early on when we were having students do internships at some of these large organizations is that, you know, the organizations themselves needed a little bit of training on cultural sensitivity and microaggressions and how to effectively host a 17-year-old Black student who may be overwhelmed by the cultural norms in that workplace, and then realizing that workplace isn't necessarily prepared to be sensitive to the nuances that those students bring. And so working on both ends of the spectrum to really kind of set students up for success is a big part of overcoming those barriers, so that they don't get overwhelmed or burnt out, and so that companies don't intentionally or unintentionally create an unwelcome environment for students who are trying something new in a new area.
Mm-hmm. And how have those challenges changed in the context of COVID-19 for the Blueprint Foundation?
And COVID obviously has affected everybody really hard. We, as I'm sure you've heard, the virus itself has disproportionately impacted Black and Brown communities, and that's been reflected in my experience. I've seen a lot of our students have family members that have gotten sick or passed away from the virus. And so in those first 6 months especially, we had to kind of, we obviously weren't gathering as frequently or much at all in those initial months. And so we had to shift our resources and convince our funders to be flexible and allowing us to reallocate some of those resources just to straight relief and helping families with food, with internet, things of that nature. Whereas most of your grant funding is pretty tightly tied to programming and has to be spent certain ways. So that was the first step. And then meeting folks where they're at and trying to fill the needs that were specific to families and how they've been impacted by the pandemic. And then, you know, as things begin to somewhat stabilize, taking advantage of the fact that most of what we do are outdoor activities and working with our partners to create spaces and create programming that we could start to continue with some small outdoor-based activities and getting students back out into the world, getting them off their screens where they're having to spend even more time now with distance learning, and helping them to rebuild those connections and address social emotional health, which we know has been so important for students during all this time that they would normally get in their school groups, or a lot of them would get in their school groups. The fact that we were able to even get back out in the fall, and for some students, get them into summer work that was outdoor based.
At the end of our interview, Duran explained how Blueprint's work has changed during the pandemic and how he views a successful student at Blueprint. Duran stressed that to him, the program is about intellectual and professional growth, not shuffling a student into a career.
Well, we had to pivot like everyone else. Work crews got smaller. For some events, if all of our students are interested, you know, the events could have over 30 students. That is not possible during COVID. So we had smaller work crews. During that time where we were all in lockdown, we shifted some of our funds to deliver home gardening kits to the students, since we couldn't take them out to, say, a Leech Botanical Garden or out to a park. We wanted to make sure that they could still engage in nature activities at home. When things went online with their schooling, we shifted resources to make sure that the students had the technology they need and to make sure that they had the wireless internet access that they needed as well. And Jason, our program director, and our mentor, Vanessa Grant Coates, began doing mental health check-ins with the students so that they still get the chance to see each other, even though we are not able to be together in person.
At the Blueprint Foundation, what does it mean for someone who goes through your program to be successful? And what could that look like? And how do you help interested students achieve those goals?
For me, it's if students gain in self-efficacy, so their confidence for doing, I would love for it to be the green sector, for wanting to pursue a career in the green sector. But if they gain enough confidence that they can pursue whichever career they want to have, then I feel like we're doing our job. And if they understand that the skills they're learning with us, if they understand how those skills translate to other careers, other jobs, to their personal life even, then I feel like we're doing a good job. If they feel like they have purpose and they have direction, like they know, again, it might not be in the green sector, but they've developed a personal plan for themselves, be it going to a four-year or going into apprenticeship to do the trades, whatever it may be. If they've got a plan that they are passionate about and that's family sustaining for them, then I feel like we've done our job. And if our industry partners are better prepared and they have the efficacy to take on our students as new employees and support and retain them, then I feel like we're doing our job.
So if listeners are interested in learning more about the Blueprint Foundation, what is the best way for them to find out more?
They can go to our website and they can learn there. We have a Facebook page, so they can sign up there. They can reach out to us directly either through the website or just using our name at theblueprintfoundation.org is our email addresses. So Duran@theblueprintfoundation.org is mine. Jason at the Blueprint Foundation is our program director. We're a small organization, so just those two.
That was Dr. Duran Coles and Jason Strawman on the Blueprint Foundation. The Blueprint Foundation engages Black students in Oregon's environmental landscape and careers in the green sector. I'm Nick Campili.
Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO's Earth Day special programming is supported by our members and by the Columbia SLU Watershed Council's SLU DIY House Party, an excuse to